Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. The Supreme Court today issued decisions in two cases with Massachusetts connections that could have dramatic impacts across the country. One case dealing with immigration, the other online retail. So first, let's talk about immigration. The case originated on Martha's Vineyard with a man who entered the country from Brazil 16 years ago and overstayed his visa. Well, today, the Supreme Court decided 8-1 in Pereira versus Sessions that if an immigrant is given a, quote, notice to appear in immigration court, that notice must designate a specific time or place. Now, this decision could affect thousands of immigrants who are in the U.S. without authorization and in certain circumstances could make them eligible for relief from deportation. So let's talk about this case. And first of all, joining us is retired federal judge and WBUR legal analyst Nancy Gertner. Judge Gertner, good to see you again.
Good to be here again.
Also with us is WBUR immigration reporter Shannon Dooling. She's been covering this case rather closely. Shannon, good to have you.
Thanks, Meghna.
So first of all, give us a little bit more of the background of this case. What are we talking about here?
Sure. Okay. So I actually visited Wesley Pereira, the man at the center of this case, on Martha's Vineyard. Spent some time with him and his family. He's a native of Brazil, as you mentioned. He has two young daughters. He's been working as a handyman on the island for 16 years, but he did overstay this visa. So he's been living in the country without authorization. So in 2006, he got one of these, quote, notices to appear, but it didn't have a time or a place for the actual hearing at which he was supposed to appear. And by statute, these notices to appear are supposed to include both of those things, both a time and a place. So DHS, Department of Homeland Security, later sent him a date and time after that initial notice to appear, but they sent it to the wrong address, which is very common, actually. They sent it to the wrong address. And so fast forward to March 2013, and Pereira is arrested for a driving violation. The Department of Homeland Security tries to deport him at that time. And this is where this court case kind of starts unraveling. He appeals that. It goes to the federal court and it ends up all the way up to the Supreme Court.
Okay, so basically he's saying he shouldn't be deported because he never knew when and where to show up.
That's exactly it.
Okay, so these notices to appear, they're obviously very important to immigrants and to the government because, in part, if I understand correctly, Shannon, they can affect what counts towards someone's time, quote unquote, living in the United States?
Yes. I sort of just rolled my eyes because it's kind of exactly par for the course with immigration law, which is that it's very complicated. So let's think of it this way. It matters because if you're an immigrant living in the country without authorization, a clock starts ticking the moment you enter the U.S. And if your clock, if your time in the country gets up to 10 years, then you become eligible to apply for what's called a 10-year cancellation of removal. It's a very high bar to win that cancellation, but you become eligible to at least apply for it. So the government says once a notice to appear is issued, so a notice to appear in immigration court is issued, it triggers this tool that the government has that's called the stop time rule. So it's essentially saying that it's stopping that clock that an immigrant is trying to get up to 10 years. And so that clock stops, you no longer accrue time. And so essentially what the Supreme Court is saying with this opinion is that in order for these notices to appear to actually stop the clock, for an immigrant, the notices must include the time and place for the hearing at which they're supposed to be appearing.
Okay. So, Judge Gertner, let me just turn to you here. What's your first reaction to this case? 8-1 ruling seems pretty significant.
My first reaction, after having been a judge for 17 years and watching immigration cases waft through my court, in which the law excused error upon error by the immigration authorities to justify removal, even pre-Trump, what's amazing is that this seems so clear now. And the notion was that the First Circuit, the Bureau of Immigration Appeals, the immigration judges all went in the other direction year after year. So what's remarkable is the court finally saying, you know, this really makes, there has to be a minimum amount of clarity with respect to these issues for immigrants, and that that's a victory really helps us understand how hopelessly unclear it has been up until now.
Right. I mean, Shannon, honestly, from a layperson's perspective, mm-hmm. it seems utterly bizarre that a notice to appear in immigration court would arrive at someone's door without a date or time.
That's exactly it. And that was sort of, I was at the Supreme Court when they were arguing these, when they were hearing these arguments, and many of the justices were just sort of incredulous at this, this notion that how can this count as a notice to appear if it doesn't tell a person when yeah. and where to appear. And so I personally am not terribly surprised at the decision,
You're not surprised because of the argument.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right.
Exactly.
But it was affirmed by the First Circuit Court of Appeals.
Oh, absolutely.
And by all the other entities that
have until
heard
it got to the Supreme
today.
Court.
Absolutely.
Interesting.
Absolutely.
So how broadly might this case be applied? Who could it affect?
Well, it can affect essentially any undocumented immigrant that's been in the country for 10 years or more that may have had one of these incomplete notices to appear show up in their mailbox. And, you know, that stopped their clock, so to speak. And so now they can at least apply for this cancellation of removal. So the impact, I mean, there's no way of counting, I don't think, how many of these incomplete notices to appear have gone out. But it is a tool that the government relies upon to sort of stop these clocks uniformly across the board. They use it very frequently.
And most of the time, these are people who are not represented by counsel.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
so whatever notice they get, they're out the door.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think it could have that kind of an impact as well.
Well, so, Shannon, you just talked a little earlier today with David Zimmer, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's
yeah.
one of Wesley Pereira's attorneys.
He is, yeah. Let's just hear a bit of tape from him, and then we can kind of talk about it.
The fact that eight justices agreed with us is particularly satisfying. And I think it's an accurate characterization or an accurate representation of what the statute says and what the government was supposed to be doing here, which is pretty clearly set out in the statute. And I think this is really a case where the government was trying to sort of shirk its responsibilities and get away with it.
And that is exactly, what eight of the nine justices decided.
Right. And I mean, Nancy, you were getting to this point a little earlier, but Pereira's attorney says the government has been shirking its responsibility.
Well, that's right. I mean, again, this has been settled law and affirmed over and over again. And so there's the affirmances, and then there are the people who are simply too poor and too scared to even challenge it. That's the other reason why immigration authorities get away with what they get away with. The question is whether this kind of clear, higher bar procedural requirements will spill over to other parts of immigration law, because we've seen
right.
this in other places as well, and that's an open question.
Okay. I mean, future cases will probably
that's
attack
right.
that question
right.
head on. Now, back to Pereira himself, Shannon,
sure.
specifically, what does today's ruling mean for him, if anything?
Yeah, so it does mean that he can apply for this 10-year cancellation of removal. Now, to be clear, the decision does not mean that he's staying in the U.S.
Right.
indefinitely, right? It means he can apply for this cancellation of removal. As I said before, it is a very high standard that people have to meet to win this 10-year cancellation of removal. You have to essentially prove that your removal from the country would cause extreme and unusual hardship to your family. So it's no guarantee for Pereira. But in the meantime, the SCOTUS decision does mean that he can stay on Martha's Vineyard while he pursues this avenue.
I see. Okay. So that is the first major case that the Supreme Court issued its ruling on today. Before we get to the second one, since I have two immigration experts here with me, I just want to briefly talk about yesterday's executive order that President Trump signed. That seemed to do an about-face on his administration's policy of separating parents and children at the southern border. Here's a little bit of tape today of the president speaking at a cabinet meeting about the order.
I signed a very good executive order yesterday, but that's only limited. No matter how you cut it, it leads to separation ultimately. I'm directing HHS, DHS, and DOJ to work together to keep illegal immigrant families together during the immigration process and to reunite these previously separated groups.
So there's some conflict over what the president just said, because we don't have any confirmation from DHS or any other branch of government that there is a plan to reunite parents and children who have been separated so far. But Judge Gertner, let me first turn to you. I mean, the president is, again, to fact check, the president of the United States, he didn't even need to sign this executive order
right.
to end the policy that
right.
his administration created. But he says it's a good policy, that they're going to keep families together. I mean, legally, do you think it's a good policy, or is it going to it's going to face some legal challenges pretty soon.
Right. He didn't have to sign this order because the problem arose because Jeff Sessions and the president said zero tolerance. Zero tolerance meant that people who are fleeing violence in Central America come to the American to the port of call in the U.S. And if they happen to cross over, then they are vulnerable to a misdemeanor criminal charge.
Right.
No other president ever enforced the misdemeanor criminal charge, but he was enforcing it. But since the criminal charges take a period of time to decide and then there are deportation proceedings, children, because of a pre-existing case, have to be released after 20 days. So it was his prosecutorial decision, which put the parents on a long-term track, and this decision, which put the kids on a immediate release yeah. track, that led to these kinds of separations.
So I want to ask you something about a specific part of this executive order,
right.
because so we may be seeing families being detained together now, but lots of immigration advocates yesterday and today have been saying the order tries to open the door to what would effectively amount to indefinite detention for these families because of the fact that the executive order calls on Attorney General Jeff Sessions to file a request to modify in California District Court
Flores,
to modify
right.
the Flores consent decree.
Right. So they want to, on the one hand, lift the requirement that children have to be released after 20 days, which was set by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. And they want to set up, interesting enough, it's the Department of Defense that is charged with opening up family detention centers. So they want to keep children in longer than they otherwise would be and create new family detention centers. Unfunded, not established now, largely overcrowded. The existing ones are overcrowded. Obama tried to do that in 2014 to increase the numbers of people who were detained. Didn't have the funding for it from Congress, and it was a disaster.
The House wants to pass a bill that would pony up some $7 billion, but that bill is unlikely to pass.
Well, the question is, I mean, we're going to wind up with cages for families.
But I want to ask you about modifying the consent decree. That still has to go through a California district court,
right?
Is that likely to happen?
Well, I mean, the consent order, they're going to have to prove to a judge that keeping children detained, even with their family, for more than, 20 days is not going to have consequences for the children as well. They're going to have to prove to a judge that the conditions, essentially, the parents are being detained pending a criminal charge. The children are guilty of nothing. That was part of the reason for these two different tracks. So they're going to have to persuade a judge that it will be, that the children will be well cared for, notwithstanding the detention over a period of time.
It'd be interesting to see what happens there because, I mean, the whole basis of the dissent decree, as I understand it from the 1990s, was that there was substantial proof that obviously detaining innocent children for long periods of time caused them significant amount of damage.
Right. And there had been abuse and there were the conditions were horrible. And given the circumstances of the rush, both to implement this new prosecutorial policy, zero tolerance, the rush now to establish this executive order, I have no confidence that these facilities will be any good. And again, we're not talking about, the president keeps on talking about MS-13. These are women and children fleeing gang violence. This is not the, the Mexican, yeah. quote, rapists, which were wrong to begin with.
Shannon, you've been covering immigration for so long. I'm just wondering what your thoughts from the executive order.
Yeah, well, I thought of when Judge Gertner just mentioned that President Obama did utilize similar detention facilities for families in 2014. And I actually went to one of them in Artesia, New Mexico. And of course, I wasn't allowed in, but I did wait for a mother and a daughter to be released after they posted bond. They were held for longer than a month in that facility together. So it's worth noting that even under Obama, mm-hmm. there were some exceptions to this Flores, the 20-day maximum that was happening. And so immigration attorneys have, been telling me that what is happening at the border right now is, in their opinion, heinous and it should not be happening, but that it's important to note that detaining families together is something that the U.S. has been doing for a while.
Interesting.
But that's certainly not these kind of numbers.
No.
Right. Shannon Dooling, WBUR immigration reporter, thank you so very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.